All right, y'all, welcome back to another episode of Technical Knockout, the Hardcore Casual MMA Podcast. I'm your host, Hussein. With me, as always, is my co-host, Jordan Patrick James.
What's going on?
We're going to recap Vettori versus Cannoneer and talk about Emmett versus Topuria and a few fights from that card. Let's do it. All right, so pretty good card for the TKO Nation. We got some good picks in there. I think I went 3-1 or 4-1 altogether. I think you did the same. We just had a different pick on one of the fights, but yeah, pretty solid record.
If I'd have just rode with our boy Pat Sabatini and stopped doubting him, I'd have made out a lot better. But you know, hey, a profit's a profit. You know what I mean?
That's a fact. Yeah, I had a few good picks on there. I stayed away from the Sabatini fight mostly because I don't know. I was a little shaky on both of them. But I'm happy that he bounced back from that loss like that. But how about Jared Cannonier in the main event? Jesus Christ.
No, man. The ageless wonder there.
Yeah, for real. Like, he set a record. Banger, man. Back and forth for the beginning. And then Cannonier just started to wash him out. You know, he set a record on his face. He dropped like 250 punches. I think it said middleweight strike record for any fight. You know, 5 rounds or 3 rounds. And the one before that was like 180, and it was from Sean Strickland. So you know those punches from Cannonier are a lot harder than the ones from Strickland. Like, so just a crazy performance from Cannonier. I'm really proud of him, honestly. He's improved a lot, even at 39. And it sucks for Vettori. You know, he was pretty much got boiled down to a punching bag at one point, who's just taking punishment. At what point you think the corner should have stopped it there? I don't know. Like the guy clearly didn't have a puncher's chance or a finishing threat in the fight going into the fifth round. Do you really need to send him out there?
I think it's a pride thing. You know, honestly, I think that comes down to a pride thing, which I think a lot of fighters could do well to put that in check. which actually, that's a good segue to this thing. Is I think that from now on, I might put a little bit of money on Vettori to go to sleep because he hasn't been slept yet, has he?
No, he's never been finished.
Yeah, he's eaten a lot of punches over the last like couple of fights, especially in that one alone. So, and, you know, I think with his, I don't know if it's a desire to eat these punches. I don't know if he's just that hungry for it, but you know, I don't think that bodes well for his health and his future. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, guys like Vettori, Holloway to a certain extent, a few other dudes on that list are not ringing a bell for me right now, but like these people take punishment like no problem every fight. You know, at a certain point the chin is gonna break. You know, it happened to Frankie Edgar, happened to Darren Elkins, and these are some of the most durable fighters in UFC history. So I mean, every dog has their day. I don't know if those punches from Cannonier didn't take him out though. I think he's got a couple of years left because those were huge punches that he didn't even get dropped, I don't think. But man, you know what really impressed me too in this fight, besides the obvious striking disparity from Cannonier, was his adjustments on the fight. Like he got tagged, he came out southpaw and got tagged when he was going for the leg kicks after the first couple landed. Vettori was able to time them, and then he went back to the orthodox and threw the inside leg kick instead, and was still hitting that same part of the foot or the same part of the leg on Vettori, but in a much safer position, you know. And what really stood out to me as well was his takedown threat. He mixed in some beautifully timed takedowns. He's always had great timing and great like fight presence and fight IQ in the moment. And it really showed off with those takedown attempts. You know, it's hard to get Vettori down. It's not easy. A lot of people have tried. Cannonier, of all people, was able to catch him slipping and get a few takedowns. So that was pretty sweet. I mean, obviously, he didn't do much with them. He landed a few ground and pound shots with the one in, the third round. But for the most part, it was just really awesome to see him mix it up like that, you know?
Where do you think Cannonier goes from here?
I mean, honestly, I feel like he probably gets the winner of... I think the winner of Whitaker versus Duplessis is going to fight Adesanya. I feel like Cannonier should get that, the winner of that fight. If not, if he wants to stay active, he could fight the loser of the Duplessis versus Whitaker, which, I mean, I think is going to be Jerkis Duplessis. I feel like Whitaker is going to smash him in that fight, but we'll cover that when we get to UFC 290. But yeah, I'd like to see either a title shot or the fight right before the title shot, because you know he's on a 2-fight win streak. He's at the top of the division. I know he lost to Adesanya and Whitaker pretty, you know, decisively, but he clearly is showing improvement. So I'd like to see him get back in there.
Yeah, I think they could give him to Bo Nickel if Bo Nickel gets past Trayshon Gore with you know, flying colors.
I mean, that's a huge step in competition, though, you know, going from Trayshon Gore to Jared Cannonier. That's tough.
He's ready. They're already talking about feeding him to Israel, so, you know, why not?
They should give him the loser of the Brendan Allen fight that we're going to talk about on the Taporia card. But let's go down the rest of the card real quick. We had some good picks down there. We picked Armand Sarukian by finish. It came in the third round, a little bit later than expected. Joaquim Silva was very tough in there. Armin Petrosian, I took by decision, and he got it done. Christian Leroy Duncan, like the commentators were remarking on it, and it really rang true, is that he has all these flashy kicks and all these, like, you know, cool finishing moves, for lack of a better term, but he's not throwing any setups. So somebody as, like, well-versed on the feet as Petrosian was able to just sniff those things out and circle out, or, you know, land a leg kick or a jab to disrupt his rhythm. And it was very effective. He ended up winning that decision. I thought he won all three rounds, but a couple of the judges gave Leroy Duncan the third. But, yeah, pretty solid fight there. That's a fun one to watch. Pat Sabatini, like we said earlier, just ran through Lucas Almeida. Almeida was so much bigger and a little bit more explosive on the feet, but Sabatini's wrestling ended up being the X factor that just washed him out, you know. And at a certain point, it looked like Almeida was looking for a way out, and that's when Sabatini snapped up that arm triangle. So well done by Sabatini to bounce back from that loss. A few other fights on here. Nicholas Dalby straight up outworked Muslim Salikov. I did not see that one happening. That was the pick that I got wrong. I thought Dalby was going to be a little bit more hesitant on the feet because of Salikov's, you know, spin kicks and his feints and stuff. But he just ran right through that. And, you know, I thought he won the second and third round. A couple of the judges gave him all three rounds. But either way, you know, I'm not arguing that Salikov won. Dalby did a great job in that fight. That was a great performance from him. Just, you know, constant work, right? Like we always know that he has. Then Alexandre Costa got it done against Jimmy Flick. Made it look pretty easy. Broke his leg down with the calf kicks and then ended up hurting him and taking him down, finishing him on the ground there. And the other pick that I had, Modestus Bukauskas, got it done very easily against Zach Pauga. I'm just gonna fade Zach Pauga in any of his fights, especially when he's fighting somebody with momentum like Modestus. But yeah, pretty solid card for the TKO Nation. We both went 4-1. Let's get into this next card. There's some good fights on there, and I'm excited to break it down. You know. All right. So obviously we'll start off with the main event. We'll work our way down. Josh Emmett versus Ilya Topuria, featherweight matchup. I think it's number 5 versus number 2 or something like that. Maybe number 6 versus number 2. But, yeah, Josh Emmett coming off of that interim title fight with Yair Rodriguez, where he had Yair hurt a couple times but ended up, you know, succumbing to the pressure and just overall wildness of Yair Rodriguez and tapping that triangle choke. Ilya Topuria riding a 6-fight win streak in the UFC. He's definitely on a long win streak. 5-fight win streak. So, all finishes except for one fight. He guy's been a wrecking ball ever since he came in the UFC. He's got power in his hands. He's got great grappling, which is what really brought him to the scene in the, you know, amateur career and regional circuit. So super dangerous, Ilya Topuria. And Josh Emmett on the wrong side of 40. I think he's 38 now, which is not easy to keep racking up wins at lower weight classes, especially one as competitive as featherweight. So this is an interesting matchup, you know. They have Ilya as a huge favorite, which I feel like is a little disrespectful to Emmett's body of work. But, you know, given that it's been a while since he's finished a fight, you know, it might be warranted. What do you think, Jordan? Who you got in this fight?
I mean, I feel like I have to go with Topuria. They're just not giving Emmett very much respect, you know, which makes it really, really hard for me to bet on him. I don't know. I feel like it's probably a little – it errs on the side of disrespectful, like you were saying. I'm not sure on this one, man. I'm surprised they have him as that big of a betting underdog going against Topuria. I think Topuria is going to win. That's probably where I'm going to put my money. But, you know, the betting disparity, it might put a big chip on Josh Emmett's shoulder to go out there and prove something, you know, prove that he still belongs in that upper echelon of the featherweight division.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's definitely defending his spot, you know. And UFC's been pretty high on Topuria, rightfully so. He's an action fighter who's, you know, handsome and well-spoken on the mic. He talks a lot of shit. So I understand the push. It does feel a little bit like taking the lamb out to slaughter. I think they're trying to build him up off his name, which is the nature of the sport, you know. Happens all the time. You know, remember seeing guys like, I don't know, when they gave Uriah Faber to Ricky Simon, or Uriah Faber to Piotr Jan, he ended up knocking out Ricky Simon, which I think, you know, might be an outcome that could happen again here. We could see the OG pull a trick out the hat. I think it's really going to come down to the striking in this fight. Josh Emmett is very hard to take down. If I'm not mistaken, I think he has the lowest bottom time in featherweight history. If not, he's like number three or four. So it's very hard for to take him down. Not to mention that he's fought a lot better fighters than Ilya Topuria has fought. I mean, Ilya Topuria is coming off of that win over Bryce Mitchell, which is definitely a huge win. But before that, he fought guys like, you know, Damon Jackson, Ryan Hall, Jai Herbert, who are good fighters, don't get me wrong, but they're not of the caliber of the people that Josh Emmett has been fighting for the past few years. You know, the Yair Rodriguezes, the Dan Iges, the Calvin Caters, Bektik, Burgos, all these guys, Lamas. He's fought who's who at featherweight. So Emmett's definitely seen some, you know, better looks or, you know, better competition. But you never know how these young guys are going to do until you give them that step up in competition. What worries me?
I don't think I'm a bit too much on this card, but I might put 5 or 10 on Emmett by KO or something like that, just to see, just for that underdog power play. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. I think Topuria, you know, on paper he has every skill to get it done. He's got better grappling. He has, you know, knockout power in his hands. Emmett seems to not take a punch super well. I mean, you know, I can't remember him getting KO'd except for against Jeremy Stevens, but, you know, since that Burgos fight where he tore his ACL in the fight, he seems to have kind of lost a step as far as his forward movement and explosiveness goes, and, you know, kind of has turned into a bit of a counterpuncher against Cater. He was able to, you know, get the decision victory that way. It was a contentious decision, but, you know, I personally thought he did enough to win. But I think that style of being patient and looking for a big shot is something that is going to suit him very well against Topuria. Topuria comes in super aggressive and, you know, kind of leaves himself open, honestly. Like, he throws these looping hooks and wide shots to the body that are really effective against people that aren't going to be throwing heat back. But even against Jai Herbert, who's a solid striker in the featherweight division, or lightweight rather, Topuria got hurt in that fight, you know, and Jai is a lightweight. He's a lot bigger than these featherweight guys, you know, stature alone. Excuse me. But, you know, Josh Emmett has thunderous power. So,
yeah, I was about to say, I could see that would be where I would see Emmett being able to get the win is, you know, being able to withstand the heavy volume of Topuria. And then, you know, finding that shot, you know, getting in there. Maybe Topuria gets a little bit too fancy or too crazy, and it stays in the pocket and just, bam, rocks him. All it takes is one, you know? Has Topuria been finished?
I don't think so. I think he's undefeated. He's 13-0. He's never lost. But, you know, like we said earlier, every dog has his day. And, you know, you do see him get hurt in some of these fights. Or maybe not hurt, but, you know, like, stunned. And, he tends to leave himself a little bit open when he's going for the kill. So I think Emmett might be able to land something big there. I don't know if it's going to be enough, though, you know. I do see the grappling canceling each other out in this fight. I think Emmett's takedown defense is going to be too much for Topuria. I don't see Emmett really trying to go to the ground with Topuria because Topuria has that black belt in jiu-jitsu in his back pocket. So I do see this fight ending up on the feet. I don't think it's going to go the distance. If either one of them wins, I see them going for the finish. Emmett can, you know, hurt Topuria with a big counterpunch and follow it up with some ground and pound, or, you know, just knock him out cold if it comes down to it. Topuria, I think, can definitely hurt Emmett as well. The body work, I think, will be a big factor in this fight for Topuria. You know, if he starts to wear down him, I could see him getting a knockout in the second or third round, or even, you know, dropping him and catching him in a submission, similar to how, Yair didn't drop him, but, you know, similar to how Yair did that, you know, beat him up on the feet to the point that he wants to shoot for a takedown and then wrap him up in something. But yeah, that being said, I'm not sure who to pick in this fight. I think I am going to end up siding on, giving the advantage to the youth and speed and Topuria. That being said, I do feel Emmett can pull out an upset here. So I'm going to end up going with Topuria. I think he'll get it done probably by knockout, probably second or third round. I don't see this fight going the distance by any means. I don't see it ending in the first round either. I think both these guys are going to, take some lumps out of each other before they go down. So I see it going down in the second or third. I think Topuria gets it done, honestly. I think it's a launching pad for him. It's a good fight for him as far as, stature goes. Emmett's not like one of the taller guys at featherweight, and that seems like height is really what gives Topuria the problem against Jai Herbert. So, yeah, I like Topuria in this fight.
I want to bet with Emmett. I really do. I really want to put that underdog on there. But it's so hard because he got submitted by Yair, so I'm gonna go with Emmett. I'm gonna ride with him. I'm gonna try to get some value out of this card. I'm gonna have Emmett by KO. All
right, I like it. I like it. Go for the gusto. I think if he does get it done, KO is a good bet. So, if you are thinking that Emmett's gonna win, you probably get some good odds on him by knockout. I don't think he's ever submitted anybody, and I don't really see this fight going to decision. The way that Topuria gets tired at certain points of the fight. That's another thing, too, is if the fight goes longer, I think it plays into Emmett's favor, He's shown up well in the third round. He's won 5-round fights against, against Ige and against Cater, if I'm not mistaken. The Ige fight was 3 rounds, but against Cater, he won the 5-round fight. I could see Topuria gassing out at a certain point, Emmett picking up the later rounds or even finishing him up in the fourth or fifth. But I do think Topuria is going to end up just washing him out, honestly. I think time is on his side. The momentum's on his side for sure. And, that's where I'm going with it. The odds makers agree. Obviously, they have him at a minus 300, so not a ton of value on him there. But I think if you get him in that round prop, second or third, on FanDuel, they have like a 1, 2, or 3 prop. I'd recommend going for that. But yeah, let's go down the card. There's a few other fights on here that are pretty good. The co-main event, Amanda Ribas versus Macy Barber. kind of an interesting matchup here at flyweight. Ribas is super active on the feet. She's got pretty solid pop in her hands, but really her grappling is her, her ace in the hole. And she just seems to be, learning a lot every fight. And coming out creative, which is something I like to see, especially in these women's divisions. Macy Barber, on the other hand, is pressure, pressure, pressure. She throws a ton of volume and has decent pop in her hands. I don't think she's really knocked anybody out, maybe one or two people, but likes to push people against the cage, kind of immobilize them, land big power punches with her pressure, put people's back against the wall, that kind of stuff. She comes from Team Alpha Male, and she kind of has that same style. It's very hard-nosed. So pretty interesting matchup there. They have Ribas at a minus 200, I think just because of the form that Macy Barber's been in recently, that she hasn't looked spectacular recently. She's won some very contentious decisions against Andrea Lee and Miranda Maverick. Judges seem to love Macy Barber, so if the fight does go to decision, they might side on her again. But I think I'm going to go with Ribas in this fight, man. I think the volume is going to be too much. I think the movement is going to be too much. She seems to have more tools on the feet than Barber. Barber throws a good, right hand, a good low kick. But, Ribas has shown some cool front kicks. She has a good jab. She can hook off when she needs to. And I think she'll get it done here, man. I think she has the more well-versed game plan. I think she can just outlast her and outwork her to a decision victory.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is a huge step up in competition for Barber. And I think it might be a little bit too much. She's obviously been getting it done, but it's against more low level fighters. So maybe this is it. Maybe this is her her chance to really vault herself up into the eyes of the UFC fans and on the rankings. But I think it might just be a little bit too much for her right now. Maybe after a couple more fights, this might be a great learning experience for her. This might be a good one for her to really see where the holes in her games are at. But I don't think she's going to get it done. I think I'm going to have to go with Amanda as well on this one money line. Well, how do you think? You think she's going to be able to knock her out?
I don't know. Barbara's pretty tough. she's taken some big shots in there from a few fighters. So I think Kibas will win the decision, honestly. But I'm just going to go money line to play it safe, you know. If anything, she might even catch her in a submission on the ground. But, yeah, I just see her outworking her and getting that decision victory. I think the rounds that she wins are going to be a lot more clear than the ones that Macy wins if she does win any.
Yeah, that sounds like a good bet.
All right, going down, we got Cody Brundage versus Cedric Dumas. Cedric Dumas came in off the Contender Series where he had a pretty solid knockout over there. Shows like he has good power in his hands, and the UFC has not been able to replicate that fortune. And honestly, the only reason I'm mentioning this fight is because every time I see Dumas, I bet against him. He does not seem to me to be UFC caliber. And to be fair, he's fighting Cody Brundage, who is coming on a short notice. It was supposed to be Puna Hill Soriano.
And has one of the worst fight IQs ever.
Yeah, that's true. He went for the takedown on Rodolfo Vieira. You know, he got swept by Mikhail Oleksychuk, knocked out there. But that being said, I mean, Brundage isn't a phenomenal fighter by any stretch of the imagination. But I think his skill set is going to be a problem for Cedric Dumas. The wrestling of Brundage in particular is going to be a huge factor. And on the feet, he seems to take a little bit more chances and have a bit cleaner of technique. You know, he was doing pretty good in that Vieira fight before he's decided to shoot on a, you know, Jiu-Jitsu world champion, which was a questionable move. But, you know, Cedric Dumas does not have that level of Jiu-Jitsu at all. So I think Brundage should make easy work of him. Honestly, if he was fighting a can of paint, I'd probably go for the can of paint. So I'm just going to fade Dumas here and go on Brundage money line. I don't know if he gets it done by finish. I think he probably does, honestly, but I think I'm just going to go with the money line bet here. I think they have a minus 180, which is pretty, you know, generous considering the level of competition that Dumas has fought and how he's looked against them.
I ain't got a horse in this race. I'm always Cody Brundage just has me wary to pick on him now.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, for sure. I mean, he, you know, fool me once, shame on me, that kind of thing, right? You fool me once, can't get fooled again. But yeah, so a couple other good fights on here. The main card opener, Brendan Allen versus Bruno Silva, is a really good matchup of classic striker versus grappler, or maybe, you know, striker versus well-rounded fighter. And Brendan Allen, I guess you can give him that credit now because he's improved his striking a bit. Bruno Silva lost to Alex Pereira, you know, gave him a tough fight, went to decision with him, took some big shots in that fight, and then came back a good amount of time later and got beat up by Gerald Meerschaert. And then he took a little bit of time off, came back and beat Brad Tavares in his last fight pretty quick too, right out the gate, which is a huge win and a huge feather in the cap for Bruno Silva. He's fighting Brendan Allen, who, like I said, has a very well-rounded game plan and was kind of one of those dudes that when he came in, everybody was like, oh, this guy is like the MMA prototype, you know, like he started off doing everything. He didn't, you know, come up as a grappler and have bad habits on the feet or the other way around. He seems to have like a pretty complete game. And I think he's starting to come into his stride a little bit. He's had like a middling career before recently, but I think he's started to really come into form. He's coming off of a submission victory over Andre Muniz, who was the division's, you know, grappling boogeyman. So huge win over there for Brendan Allen. And besides that, he's on a 4-fight win streak behind that. So the guy's really come to his own since losing to Chris Curtis. I'm going to have to go with him in this fight. Honestly, I think he has, again, more tools and is better suited to use those tools against Bruno Silva. Bruno Silva has that thunderous KO power that he can definitely, you know, pull out of his back pocket. But Brendan Allen seems to take a shot pretty good. And I think he'll be able to wear him down and, you know, if not finish him on the ground, at least, you know, win a decision victory off of the takedowns and top control. You got a horse in this one?
No, but I am looking at that Neil Magny prelim main event.
Yeah, that's a good one. Let's get into it. Philip Rowe versus Neil Magny. Neil Magny, you know, everybody's familiar. He's a UFC veteran. At one point was on like an 8-fight win streak, I think it was, something crazy at welterweight. Now it's kind of middling, but he's fought obviously a lot better competition since then. He's got the grappling threat. He likes to hold people against the cage and make them make mistakes. He'll land elbows and knees in that position, but really what he's looking for is one of his, you know, patented trip takedowns where he'll end up on top and just smother people. If not, he'll find a submission, but a lot of times he'll use that grappling to just neutralize his opponents, and he does it very effectively. On the feet, leaves a little bit to be desired, but has shown some improvements in the last couple of years, to give him credit. You know, just doesn't use that reach as well as I feel like he should. But, you know, has solid kicks, had solid, you know, volume on the feet. Definitely not a power puncher by any stretch of the imagination, but can put things together and, you know, overwhelm his opponents. I think that's really the game plan for Neil Magny a lot of times, is just go out there, overwhelm the guy, you know, give him a lot of things to think about, the takedowns, the volume on the feet, the clinch game. But ultimately, I think his clinch game is his bread and butter. Going against Philip Rowe, who trains with Mike Perry down in Florida, and this is a card in Florida, so you know the crowd's going to be on his side. Philip Rowe is built pretty similar to Neil Magny in that they're both like 6 foot something and have, well, they're okay, they're actually both 6 foot three and have an 80-inch reach. So it's kind of like the good Magny versus the bad Magny. I feel like Philip Rowe's like the like, if you've seen Fairy Odd Parents, they had like the Nega Chin and Nega Timmy and stuff. It was just like the evil version. That's what I feel like Philip Rowe is. He's like Majin Magny. So I mean, he has power in his hands. He uses his reach well on the feet. His grappling is, he has good jujitsu on the bottom, but his wrestling is not really a threat. So if Magny does win this fight, I expect him to kind of, you know, just neutralize him in the clinch against the cage, wear him down. Philip Rowe seems to not have the best cardio in the division. Rowe has power on the feet, you know, likes to land those long shots, stay on the outside, land big, you know, right punches and or right straights rather, and just, you know, keep the guy at the end of his punches and hurt him. You know, he's a very like conviction. He has a lot of conviction when he's fighting. Magny, on the other hand, tends to be a little bit passive sometimes, and it's bit him in the ass before. But really, when you look at his record and the people that he's lost to, he loses against great grapplers. You know, it's very rare that he'll lose against a striker. Most strikers that he's fought, he's won. I mean, just looking at his last few fights, you know, lost to Gilbert Burns, beat Dana Rodriguez, lost to Shavkat Rakhmonov, beat Max Griffin, beat Jeff Neal, beat Robbie Lawler, beat Tony Martin, lost to Michael Chiesa, lost to Ponzinibbio, who is a striker but uses wrestling very strongly in that fight. The only other striker I can think of that he lost to is Lorenz Larkin, but besides that, he tends to, you know, wash out strikers, you know, wear him down, uses clinch, uses elbows, uses knees, uses trips. It's really when he fights somebody that's compact and very explosive and super, like, you know, a grappling threat, like a Gilbert Burns, like a Rafael Dos Anjos, like a Michael Chiesa. These guys are, you know, Neil Magny's kryptonite. Somebody like Philip Rowe has never really given Magny trouble. And unless he's turned old overnight, I expect Neil Magny to get it done here. I think he has, you know, more tools in his pocket. I think Philip Rowe might be able to catch him in a couple of exchanges, but I think overall the work rate from Magny is going to be enough to either win him a decision or get him a late finish with a submission in the second or third.
Yeah, I agree. I'm probably siding with Magny on this one. I'm going to go money line with it because I'm not really, I guess, probably decision. Honestly, I don't see anybody putting anybody away on this one. I might go with on a decision on Magny just to kind of get a little juice to that play. But yeah, you're right. You know, I think he's going to do enough to get it done. Magny is like the ultimate gatekeeper at welterweight, and I don't think Philip Rowe is going to break through that glass ceiling today.
Yeah, fair. I like the decision prop. I think that's a good bet. Rowe's pretty tough, so I could see him out, you know, outstanding the punishment, quote unquote, that Magny's going to give him. Magny just, you know, loves to make these fights so ugly. And I think that's going to be a big tool in that fight with Philip Rowe. If it's a clean fight, Philip Rowe's probably going to win, you know, on the outside with the leg kicks and the punches. But if Magny can get in tight, make it ugly, and you know, make it a dog fight, for lack of a better term, I see him getting that done there. A couple other fights on the prelims that are pretty exciting. Randy Brown is fighting my boy. He's fighting Wellington Turman, who's going down to welterweight for the first time. Or not for the first time, but the first time in a while. Turman started off at welterweight, went up to middleweight, and really filled out in that weight class. I thought he was going to have great success there. Had a kind of a middling record when he went up, but nonetheless is going back down to welterweight. He draws Randy Brown, who is not an easy fight for anybody. Randy Brown's always improving. Again, kind of similar to Neil Magny in that he tends to lose to an archetype of power puncher. Wellington Turman's not really that guy. I mean, not that he doesn't have power in his hands. He has, you know, decent power in his hands, but his grappling and his submissions are really his where he, you know, butters his bread. And I do feel like Randy Brown is going to have enough tools on the feet to make it a long night for Wellington Turman. I expect him to get it done here. I don't know if he'll knock him out or if he'll submit him or get a decision, so I'm just going to go with him on the money line. But I expect him to have, use that reach, stay on the outside, slap him with leg kicks, you know, just outwork him and land bigger shots throughout the fight. I think Turman might have some success in the grappling, but Randy Brown is always improving in that aspect. So, I'm gonna go with Randy Brown here. I'm pretty comfortable picking him.
Yeah, I don't. I'm probably gonna stay with my picks, my Emmett, Amanda, and Magny on this one. I don't think I'm gonna get too further into this card.
Fair. Last fight I want to talk about, just because I always mention him every time he's fighting, a super exciting prospect to watch at flyweight. Tatsuro Taira is opening up the card, so you know, definitely get out there early. Yeah. He's fighting Cledson Rodriguez, who's another good grappler, but you know, tends to be a little bit more submission over position. You know, he has power in his hands too, Rodriguez, but Taira just seems to have that well-rounded game plan on the ground. You know, always going for the position, never really leaving himself in a place to get swept or get submitted. And I expect him to kind of just smother Cledson Rodriguez. He might get a submission late in the fight. He might just end up winning a decision. But Cledson Rodriguez has never been finished, so I think the decision is a good prop here. I'd like to see Taira keep that train rolling and, break into that upper echelon at flyweight. There's a lot of good fights for him at the top, and I think he's on his way to there. So I'm going to rock with Taira in this fight.
I think so, too. I think I'm going to drop 5 on a decision by Tatsuro.
Yeah, I think that's a good bet. He might show a bunch of wrinkles to his game and come out and get a submission, but I do think Cledson's pretty tough to finish on the ground there. So I'm going to go with Taira by decision. Money line is like minus 250, so hopefully the decision prop's like plus 150 or plus 200. Yeah, but yeah, that's all I got for this card. Let's go down the betting slip and consolidate everything. So going down the card, I'm going to take Topuria money line. I'm going to take Amanda Ribas. I'm going to take Cody Brundage. I'm taking Brendan Allen, Neil Magny, and Randy Brown. And then I'll probably throw a little bit on Taira by decision.
I'm going to go with Emmett by KO, hoping for that underdog upset. I got Hebus money line. I got Magny by decision. And I got Tatsuro by decision. I'm going to wrap it all up in a nice little round robin.
Good idea. Always.
I just want to mention, too, that we have turned a profit on, like, the last 3 of 4 cards. You know, banking, I think if you aggregate our percentages, we're at, like, you know, getting up in that 50%, 60% return rate on our investments on these cards. So if you're not riding with TKO, you're not making money.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the baby has to eat the sushi. You know, we talked about this.
My kid's got expensive taste. What am I going to do?
Yeah, facts. But yeah, ride with us. You know, we've been doing pretty well. Last week we had both of us only got 1 pick wrong out of the 5 fights we picked. The week before that was not so hot, but the 2 weeks before that we've been pretty solid. So, you know, 3-1 in our last 4 cards. Let's keep the ball rolling, man. I think we can. I think there's some good picks on this fight card. You know, not a lot of potential for underdog upsets, in my opinion. Maybe in the main event, in the upset alert, I'd probably go with Josh Emmett just to get it done by KO at some point in the fight. But besides that, I think there's a lot of favorites on here that could be minus 300s and are only minus 150 or minus 200. So,
hey, solid value. Nice early card. Get some money. Get out. Go on my Saturday. I like it.
Yeah. Card starts at, I think, like 12 p.m. Eastern. So, get out there early. You know, catch that Tatsuro Taira fight. You guys don't want to miss that. But, all right. Thank you so much for listening, y'all. Stay tuned for the next episode. I'm hoping we can put out a fight look back or career retrospective soon. Schedules are pretty busy, but, you know, I want to put you all out with some long-form content soon. In the meantime, enjoy these fight picks and enjoy the money that we make off of them. Peace out.